Chapter 28. The jet bikes were golden, with curved prows shaped in the form of eagles' beaks, their flanks carved to resemble swept-back wings. Fossa Takar counted seven of them, swooping in low on an attack run towards his position at the end of the Raptora Plaza. The warriors riding them were also golden, their red helmet plumes streaming behind them like pennants. Rapid-firing cannons blazed from underslung gun pods, ripping up the flagstone roads leading from the Mylas Agora. Geysers of rock burst from every impact, but Fossa Takar wasn't worried. He braced his weight on his right leg and snatched his hands through the air as though sweeping a curtain open. Four of the jet bikes were plucked from the air as if they had reached the end of an unbreakable tether. Fossa Takar slammed them against the high walls of the Tamoran Library, shattering the statues of its first custodians. The last three exploded as Hathor Mart sent a cataclysmic electrical surge through their engines. The burning wreck smashed into the ground and tumbled end over end towards the Thousand Sun's position, skidding to a halt less than a metre from Fossa Takar. "Custodies," he grunted. "They're not so tough." The northern reaches of Tiska were aflame. The port was a mass of reeking pillars of smoke, the stink of Promethean mingling with the acrid reek of burning tar, rubber and metal. Thick clouds hung low over the city and ash fell like black rain. Men and women in their hundreds streamed past his position, heading towards the pyramid of Fotep, laden with books and arms full of scrolls. The streets were littered with fallen tomes and fragments of statuary. Carved heroes of the Raptora had once looked down on the plaza, but shelling from enemy artillery had toppled all save a handful. Expressionless faces and outstretched hands lay strewn across the flagstones. Mixed among the civilians were bloodied remnants of the Palatine Guard, shell-shocked men drenched in blood who staggered from the port in shock. These terrified survivors were all that remained of the soldiers tasked with containing the initial enemy landings. "I've had word from the Athenians," said Hathor Mart, jogging over from his position to Fossa Takar's left. "What is it?" "The Wolf King is coming," said Hathor Mart gleefully. "They say he was first to land at the port and is fighting his way towards us." "Fighting?" said Fossa Takar. "I don't think there's much fighting going on. The wolves are cutting through the spire guard with ease." "You didn't really expect them to hold, did you?" said Hathor Mart. "They're only mortals, and this is an Astartes fight." "Not just Astartes," said Fossa Takar, gesturing towards the wrecked jet bikes. "Custodes want our heads on spikes, too." "They all died just the same," said Hathor Mart. "Any word other than the location of the Wolf King?" "Adaman's got the northern perimeter sealed. He's holding the upper slopes of Old Tiska from the Acropolis to the eastern flank of Corvidae Pyramid, leaving us with the western front from the Pavoni Pyramid to the port." "Looks that way," agreed Hathor Mart. "The Athenians are taking up position in Oculum Square. They're going to feed us intel on the enemy plans as they get it. What's left of the Spire Guard is taking up position with the Legion, but we can't count on them." "What about Kalophis?" "No word yet." Explosions burst nearby as streaking missiles corkscrewed out of the sky and detonated overhead. Razored shrapnel scythed downwards, tearing a dozen civilians to bloody rags. "Here they come!" shouted Hathor Mart, running back to his position. A trio of boxy shapes moved through the smoke, the roar of their engines like the cry of living beasts. Trailing clouds of plaster dust and fire, three enormous land raiders in the livery of the Space Wolves burst into the plaza. Behind them came the warriors of Leman Russ, hundreds of armoured fighters advancing in a howling tide of blades and bolts. Among the warriors of Fenris were warriors in gold and red. They carried long spears with ebony hafts and shimmering blades. Fossa Takar grinned at the thought of matching his strength against such warriors. Packs of slavering wolves bounded across the plaza, their bared fangs flecked with scraps of uniform and flesh. The Thousand Suns opened fire, and the plaza erupted in a storm of gunfire. The din of shooting was eclipsed by the howls of the wolves. Fossa Takar snapped his fingers and broke the alpha male of the pack in two. Bolter fire smacked armor plates and spun space wolves around, but the warriors of Russ were masters of charging from cover to cover, and few were falling. Heavy las bolts flickered overhead, fizzing spears of impossibly bright energy. Explosions burst all along the Thousand Suns lines as thudding bangs of bolter fire pummeled their positions. Pounding concussions ripped across the plaza, but the kind shields of the Raptora were proof against such attacks. He concentrated on the lead land raider, reaching out and closing his fist. He wrenched his hand back, and the left sponsoon tore free of the vehicle in a blazing plume of white light. The heavy tank skidded around and slammed into the vehicle next to it, crushing the warriors advancing between them. Phocis Takkar grinned. "You didn't realize what you were getting into here, did you?" he said. Another angry retort died in his mouth as sudden, cramping pain knotted in his belly, like someone had taken a fistful of his intestines and wrenched them upwards. He tasted bile and felt a sickly lather of sweat prickle on his skin. Another vehicle exploded, its hull a writhing spiderweb of coruscating lightning. The last vehicle erupted in flames as Aura Magma's warriors hurled fireballs at its frontal glacis. It kept coming, shooting as it crushed priceless tomes and beautiful sculpture to shards beneath its treads. Aura Magma himself stood atop a fallen master of the Raptora and wove sheets of white fire like a conductor before his orchestra. "Too arrogant, that one," said Phocis Takkar, recognizing Aura Magma's flaw while ignoring his own. A missile streaked out and slammed into the Land Raider's topside, skidding off its armor and exploding further behind it. Phocis Takkar battered a handful of Space Wolves back with a flick of his wrist, hurling them beneath the tracks of the blazing Land Raider. Their armor broke open with satisfyingly wet cracks. No sooner had the vehicle crushed his victims than fire spewed from its insides. Its escape hatches slammed open as the blazing crew fought to escape the furnace of their vehicle. Aura Magma let them burn. Lightning danced through the Space Wolves, exploding their bodies within the armoured casing of their battle plate. Hissing sheets of fire turned the ground molten, while the kind shields soaked up the weight of return fire. Phocis Takkar laughed to see his legion unleashed, with no constraints to its full potential and no faint hearts complaining because they could kill the enemies of the Imperium better than anyone else. A sudden, cold shiver made him start, the whisper of a ghostly touch at the back of his mind. He had felt it once before, but before he could recall where, a wolf leapt at him through the flames. Its fur was ablaze, and he reached up to flick it away with a gesture. Nothing happened. The wolf slammed into him and barreled him to the ground. Its jaws snapped down, the fangs gouging deep furrows in his visor. Yellow talons tore into his side, and he grunted as he felt them pierce his flesh. The wolf bit him in a frenzy, and Phocis Takkar fought to keep it from his throat. His eyes met those of the beast, and he saw into its heart the alien core of the being beneath the mask of the wolf. His eyes widened in recognition, but it was too late to do anything except fight. The beast's jaws fastened on his neck, but before he could bite down, Phocis Takkar slammed his fist into the wolf's belly. He pistoned his arm through its ribcage, crushing through ribs and vital organs to shatter its spine. The light went out of its eyes, and Phocis Takkar threw its body away in disgust. He climbed to his feet, looking at his hands in horror. He willed power to flow through them, but he felt nothing. No connection to the great ocean, nor any hint of its fire. A slender shape in form-fitting golden armour danced into view, a long-bladed sword lancing for his belly. He battered the blade away with his hecker staff and took stock of his attacker. It was a woman, but no ordinary woman. The lower portion of her face was obscured by a silver muzzle mask, and her dark eyes were tattooed with tears. Now Phocis Takkar knew why his powers had failed. He heard screams of pain as the kind shields failed and more of the silent sisterhood made their presence felt. She came at him with a lancing thrust of a sword. He blocked it with his staff once more, sliding the hook down to the hilt of her blade and twisting. She read the move and drew her blade back, spinning around and going low with a slender dagger aimed at his groin. Phocis Takkar stepped in to meet her, and her dagger shattered on the plates of his thigh. He brought his knee up into her face and crushed the mask hiding her jaw. Blood and teeth flew from the impact, but the woman rolled out of reach. All along the edge of the plaza, hundreds of armored warriors came together in a battering clash of plate. No longer was this a battle to be fought with one side having the advantage. This was now a brutal, sweating, throat-tearing fight at close quarters. Phocis Takkar unsheathed his combat blade and dropped into a fighting crouch before the armored woman. He held his staff out before him, with his knife high at his shoulder. "Very well, Null Maiden," he snarled. "I'll just kill you the old-fashioned way." Though his body lay recumbent on a crystal throne of golden fire, Colophus marched through the ruins of Tisca with the strides of a mighty giant. Structures were children's building blocks, the fires flickering embers. People were specks to be crushed beneath his thunderous steps. He marched past the Cretus Gallery towards the Skelmis Tolus, with a wide expanse of ocean at his right shoulder. The streets of Old Tisca were too narrow for a titanic battle engine such as Canis Vertex, and ancient buildings exploded as he smashed through them like some destructive colossus from ancient legends. Gunfire lashed up, but none of it could harm him. He felt the heat of Seoda gather in his right arm, and unleashed a torrent of fire that bathed six streets in billowing clouds of sticky flames. He couldn't hear the screams, but he saw his howling victims falling to their knees and begging for salvation. The guns of Canis Vertex were functional, but with his tutelary's connection to the great ocean, his pyrokinetic abilities were boosted a hundredfold, and he had no need of them. The mighty fists of the Titan were wreathed in flames, and with every gesture, tank-sized fireballs slammed into the enemy. Colophus laughed as he spat tongues of flame from both arms, burning the invaders back to their ships. The attacking forces had cut a deep wound into Tisca, but Colophus saw how far the invaders had extended themselves in their urgent need to break the defenders in two. Canis Vertex could cut them off from their reserves, and the Thousand Suns' lines would drive them back to the ocean. The Athenians dispersed word of the enemy movements, and the Corvidae met and countered any surprise attacks planned on a whim. The battle was by no means won by either force, but from his god's eye view, Colophus could see the battle was turning in favour of the Thousand Suns. "You bit off more than even you could chew," roared Colophus, the words coming out in the real world as a deafening blurt of eardrum-busting static from the engine's warhorn. Gunships and speeders slashed forwards, guns blazing and missiles arcing towards his armoured hide. Without voids, he would have been vulnerable, but a shield of flame turned shells to molten droplets of lead and detonated missiles before they could impact. He felt his tutelary's savage joy, its power jostling for control, and he clamped down his authority. It shrieked in jealous spite, and Colophus spasmed with a soul-deep sensation of nausea. Canis Vertex halted its rampage, and explosions erupted across its armoured chest as its etheric armour vanished. Scenting blood, the jet bike speeders and gunships closed in to deliver the death blow. "Get back," he hissed. "This is mine." Seoda screeched and angrily returned to the body of Canis Vertex. A billowing flare of heat erupted from the Titan, and a dozen aircraft were swatted from the sky by the intense burst, their engines fused and pilots seared to charred bones. Colophus spat onto the floor of the Pyrrhae Temple, the blood hissing as it boiled in the intense heat. His armour was smoking, and dark light built behind his eyes as he wept tears of fire that cut blackened scars down his cheeks. The library of the Corvidae, normally a place of quiet sanctuary and solitude, was now a site of frantic activity. Ankuinen directed the labours of hundreds of scribes and servitors as they emptied the shelves and data cores of the library. The vast chamber contained hundreds of thousands of texts, too many ever to be evacuated in so short a time, but Ahriman's orders had been explicit. Everything that could be saved was to be transferred to the Pyramid of Fotep. The light of fires filtered through the crystal walls and danced over the steel and glass shelves of the library. Massively overladen bulk servitors carried panniers of books, and terrified scribes swept even more into protesting load-lifters. He had tried to impose some kind of order on the evacuation of the library, but soon found that impossible. The panic of being so close to the fighting was a plague spreading through his minions, and his carefully ordered plans had fallen apart within moments. "Ensure the narcotic manuscripts are kept separate from the prophecies," he shouted, seeing a tearful scribe bundling books from different eras together in a servitor's overflowing pannier. Scrolls and torn pages fluttered to the terrazzo floor. Dust fell from the high ceilings as something exploded nearby, and the library echoed with terrified screams. Bodies flowed past him, their arms filled with heavy books and rolled-up maps and parchments. The Corvidae had collected so much in their researches into the future, so much that had yet to be studied and properly interpreted. How much knowledge of things to come would be lost in this senseless attack? A wave of dizziness swamped him, and he reached out to steady himself. His hand closed on the cold steel of a shelf, and he glanced over at the book nearest his fingers. It was a tattered, worn leather copy of Liber Draconi, incongruously sitting next to the Book of Atum and twine-bound pages of the Voluspa. He snatched his hand away as though burned. "The Dragon of Fate," he whispered. Since his earliest days in the ranks of the Thousand Suns, Ankh-Morpork had been haunted by dreams of a hissing dragon born of ice and fire. Its breath was the death of stars, and its eyes the light of creation. Long had he sought the meaning of his dream, but the symbolism of dragons was manifold. To some, the dragon represented intellectually superior man overcoming the untamed natural world, or creatures of primal chaos that could only be destroyed through disciplined marshalling of mental and physical prowess. To others, it was a symbol of wisdom, adopted by primitive emperors to enhance their perceived power. To Ankh-Morpork, it was a symbol of impending doom. He backed away from the bookshelf and looked up as a sudden premonition of danger flashed into his mind. A flaming mass was hurtling towards the temple, its form blurred and indistinct through the crystal panes. Ankh-Morpork turned and ran back towards the entrance of the library as a tremendous blast rocked the temple. Glass panes and adamantium columns shattered as a blazing golden-skinned Thunderhawk gunship smashed into the temple. The wreck spun as its remaining wing caught one of the enormous structural members, and it slammed into the ceiling before dropping to the floor of the library with a thunderous explosion. Razor-sharp fragments and blazing sheets of jet fuel sprayed out from the wreckage, and the dry pages contained within the library eagerly caught light. Ankh-Morpork was hurled through the air by the force of the blast, slamming into a high shelf and crashing through it to land on an overturned load-lifter and its spilled cargo of books. The shelf buckled and crashed down on top of him in a rain of twisted metal and glass. Ankh-Morpork tried to extricate himself from the remains of the shelving unit, but fell back as searing pain flared in his leg and chest. Taking a deep breath, he took stock of his wounds. His leg was pinned beneath a fallen column, and a jutting spar of steel protruded from his chest. The fall had torn the wound gapingly wide, and blood pumped from his ruptured heart. Not even his secondary organ would be able to keep up with so rapid a loss. Flaming liquid spread through the library, clawing at groaning shelves and seeking out fresh paper to sate its rapacious appetite. Dead and dying scribes surrounded Ankh-Morpork, their bodies shredded by flying debris or burned beyond recognition. He looked up to see a shimmering rain of glass falling from the enormous, smoking hole the crashed gunship had torn. It was like a waterfall of crystal, and as he stared at the mesmerizing sight, he saw a golden eye reflected in the shards as they fell in slow motion. The eyes watched him sadly, and Ankh-Morpork had the powerful sense that they could easily save his life, yet chose not to. "Why?" he begged, but the eyes had no answer for him. A faint scratching of metal sounded at his ear, and he twisted to call for help, but his words trailed off as he saw a black raven watching him with its head cocked to one side. Its wings were glossy and black, though he could see cyber implants worked with great subtlety into its skull. The bird regarded him quizzically, and he smiled at the sight of his cult symbol. "What are you?" he asked. "A vision of the future? A symbol of salvation?" "Neither, I think," said a coarse voice at his shoulder, and Ankh-Morpork twisted to see a warrior in armour the colour of a winter's morn. It shimmered as though sheened with a layer of frost, and Ankh-Morpork saw nothing but hatred in the space wolf's body language. The raven took flight with a sharp caw and landed upon the warrior's shoulder guard. The warrior carried a long staff topped with a golden eagle, and a host of warriors flooded into the Corvidae library behind him. They were golden and grey, and they carried long-necked weapons with blue flames at their hissing nozzles. "Who are you?" cried Ankh-Morpork, trying to summon the ether to strike down this impertinent invader. No power was coming, and he felt the ache of powerlessness as a jagged pain in his heart. "I am called Urthir Weirdmake, rune priest to Amlodi Skarsen Skarsensen of the 5th Company of Space Wolves," said the warrior, removing his helmet to reveal a bearded warrior of great age, with pale eyes and a braided beard. A leather skull-cap covered the top of his head, and Anquanen saw a willowy female in skin-tight armour of bronze and gold behind him. Her eyes were dead and unforgiving, and he recoiled from the emptiness he saw within them. "Weird Make, the Dragon of Fate!" hissed Anquanen, his eyes widening in understanding. "It's you! It's always been you!" The rune priest smiled, though there was no amusement, only triumphant vindication. "Dragon of Fate, I suppose I am," he said. Anquanen tried to reach his Hecastaff, but it was lost in the devastation of the crash. He tried to pull his leg free. "Do not struggle," said Weird Make. "It will make your death easier." "Why are you doing this?" begged Anquanen. "This is a dreadful mistake. You must see that. Think of all that will be lost if you do this terrible thing." "We are obeying the Emperor's will," said Weird Make, "as you should have done." "The Thousand Sons are loyal," gasped Anquanen, and a froth of bubbling blood spilled from his mouth. "We always were." Weird Make knelt beside Anquanen and pressed an icy gauntlet to his face. "Do you have a valediction? Any last words before you die?" Anquanen nodded as the future opened up before him. Through gurgling, bloody coughs, he hissed his final prophecy. "I can see the ether inside you, rune priest," he hissed with the last of his strength. "You are just like me, and one day those you serve will turn on you too." "I almost pity your delusion," said Weird Make, shaking his head. "Almost." Weird Make stood to his full height and waved more of the warriors with flame weapons forward. Anquanen heard the whoosh of streaming jets of fire destroying 100 lifetimes worth of knowledge, and tears gathered in the corners of his eyes. "You will tell me one thing before you die," said Weird Make. "You will tell me where I can find the star-cunning one called Azek Araman." Fursitakar had the advantage of weight and strength, but the Null Maiden was lightning quick, and her blade whipped like a silver snake. They duelled in the ruins of the plaza amid of a sprawling melee of armoured bodies. Blackened hulks of wrecked tanks littered the plaza, and glass fell in a glittering crystal rain from smoking holes punched in the Raptora pyramid. Statues fell from its golden ledges to shatter on the stone below, and the constant thud of artillery impacts further east set a rhythmic tone for the battle. Fire bathed the combatants in a ruddy orange light, and Fursitakar felt a liberating sense of his own strength, even as his etheric powers were denied him. He spun his staff in lazy circles as the Sister of Silence stared at him with her dead eyes. "There is nothing to you, is there?" he said. "I pity most mortals who cannot see what I see but you. You live in dead space with silence as your only companion. It will be a mercy to end your life." The woman did not reply, and launched a rapier quick thrust at his throat. Fursitakar swayed aside and swept his arm out as she came in for a reverse stroke. Her blade whipped around his forearm, cutting a groove around his gauntlet, and he lunged towards her with his staff outstretched. She bent back beneath his strike, sweeping her legs out and hammering a heel into his knee. His armour cracked and pain shot up his thigh. Fursitakar stepped back, favouring his good leg, and grinned. "You're quick, I'll give you that," he said. She didn't answer, and dodged his next attack with similar grace. A flurry of shots sent up geysers of rock dust beside them, and he flinched back from the heavy impacts. "Time to end this," he said. The woman came at him again, and this time he made no move to stop her. Her sword plunged into his chest plate, slicing through the compound ceramite and armour-plas. But before he could penetrate the ossified bone shield over his ribs, he stamped forward and rammed his combat knife up into the woman's arm. The blade sliced between her radius and ulna, and she screamed in agony. "Not so silent now, eh?" he snarled, dragging her towards him. She fought against his strength, but her struggles only intensified her pain. Fursitakar slammed his helm into her face, and the Sister of Silence's head caved in. He wrenched his combat knife clear as he felt his power surge back into his limbs with a frisson of painful pleasure. Utipa flared into existence above him, and he welcomed his tutelary's presence, feeling its return boost his power. Fossetakar sheathed his bloody blade and unslung his bolter, ramming a fresh magazine home and racking the slide. He snapped the silver blade protruding from his chest and turned from the body before him, jogging back to the fighting and firing his bolter at targets of opportunity as he went. The raging combat swirled like a seething tide, with neither force quite able to gain the upper hand. The space wolves fought with furious abandon, utterly directed and focused, but without the clarity of vision to appreciate the whole picture. The Thousand Sons fought with clinical detachment, every warrior having achieved the lower enumerations to better focus their skills. As Astartes, they were trained to excel in the brutality of close combat, but Magnus had taught them there was always another, cleverer way to win. "Understand the foe," Magnus had said, "and you will know how to beat him." It was a lesson the Space Wolves and Custodes had taken to heart, for how else would they have thought to bring the Null Maidens of the Silent Sisterhood with them? Knowing that gave Fossetakar all he needed to turn this battle around. He ran through the thick of the fighting, casting his mind out into the swirling mass of heaving emotions. The red mist of anger and hatred hung over the struggling fighters, but three patches of deadness were like islands of silence amid the oceans of carnage. "Got you," he hissed. He saw Hathar Mart fighting back to back with Auramagma and shot his way through the crush of bodies to reach his fellow captains. A warrior in grey armour slashed at him with a saw-bladed axe, but Fossetakar wrenched it from his grip with a thought and drove the screaming teeth into the warrior's face without breaking stride. His pace slowed as he came within range of another Null Maiden. He stopped and climbed onto an empty plinth that had once supported the statue of Magister Akhenatos, pulling his bolter tight into his shoulder and scanning for the dead zones within the battle through Utipa's eyes. His tutelary swooped over the battlefield, and Fossetakar felt a sudden burst of pain in his chest. He looked down. The wound was still bleeding, which was odd. Then he saw the iridescent shimmer to his blood and sensed its ambition. He knew what it meant, but angrily clamped down on the sudden fear that accompanied such recognition. Taking a deep breath, he focused on what he was seeing through Utipa's eyes. He saw the first of the Null Maidens and shifted his aim towards her. She fought in the midst of a knot of space wolves and custodes against Hathor Mart's warriors. The bolter slammed back against his shoulder, and the woman collapsed, the back of her neck and shoulder torn off by the blast of the shell. Following Utipa's guidance, he found the second Null Maiden and put a bolt round through her chest. The third he killed with a snapshot as she fled to the cover of one of the wrecked land raiders. Immediately, the Thousand Sons went on the offensive. Lightning flashed from Hathor Mart's hands, and Auramagma threw out blazing streams of liquid fire. Kind shields flared to life, and the space wolves were hurled back from the edges of the pyramid. Fossetakar roared and leapt from the plinth. Bolts of pure force slammed into his enemies, scattering them before him like a charging cavalryman. As much as he had felt a strange sense of freedom when stripped of his power, it was a moment of fleeting enjoyment compared to this. Hathor Mart and Auramagma appeared at his side, and he read their joy at this sudden turn in their fortunes. Auramagma was as feral as the space wolves, while Hathor Mart was pathetically relieved to have his powers back. The Thousand Sons formed on their captains, a fighting wedge of lightning-wreath killers, plunging into the body of the space wolf army like a lance. The space wolves and custodes fell back before them, helpless, without any means of combating the lethal powers of the Thousand Sons. A terrible howl of fury echoed around the plaza, and every pane of glass within the Raptora pyramid exploded into diamond fragments. They fell in a crystal rain that reflected the fire and smoke of battle in every shard. Fossetakar dropped to one knee, his auto-senses screaming with the overload of sound. "What in the name of the great ocean?" he managed before he remembered where he had heard that howl before. "Shrike," said Hathor Mart, recalling the same thing. The space wolves parted, and Fossetakar saw the enormous majesty of the Wolf King and a coterie of gold-armored giants striding through the battle lines towards them.